did that jog some memory?
Yeah, the cobwebs flew away. I was just, I'm amazed at how astute I was back then.
You were an astute guy, man. And so anyway, today we've got earthquake stories, starting with an interview you did with Mike Janicek, a cameraman at local TV station downtown Anchorage. Do you remember doing this interview?
No, not a bit. I'm going to love listening to it again. It'll be like it's brand new.
We keep recycling these old shows, folks, because we can't remember squat. Anyway, this is Mike Janicek with Mike Ford.
Michael Janicek was a cameraman downtown, and let's give a big Alaska show welcome to Michael Janicek. Thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good morning. I'm enjoying a beautiful day out in the valley in Palmer.
Oh, nice. It's a great place to be when it's a beautiful spring morning. First weekend of spring.
And the ground's not moving.
That's a good thing. So you were a cameraman for what was then KENI television. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So tell us how you came to be downtown on a good Friday.
Well, I was, like you said, a 15-year-old working at KENI, and I had been preparing for the news, which was at 6 o'clock, and so as you know, the quake was around 5:30, and so I had the flu that day and had not eaten all day, and asked my supervisor if I could run upstairs to Woolworths and get a milkshake. I thought I could hold that down, and he of course said, "Yeah, if I'd bring him one." And so I shot out of the control room, headed upstairs, and while walking down the street, headed for Woolworths. By the way, the control room was in the basement of the 4th Avenue Theater building. The ground began to move a little bit, and my equilibrium started talking to me, and I thought, my goodness, I'm going to be sick again right here downtown on 4th Avenue. And of course, it didn't take very long for me to realize that it was not the flu that was making me feel that way. The ground was moving pretty violently. I actually was standing right in front of Adams Stationers at the time. And it was just a building down from Woolworths, which is where I was headed to get a milkshake. And I saw the corner of the building separate, and that certainly got my attention. But shortly after that, the window on the building blew out like there was an explosion inside. And just shortly after the glass had fallen, there was still dust rising. Out of the window comes a young man. And being a track kid at the time, I thought, wow, perfect hurdle form for this guy. And then it dawned on me, like, hey, that's it, man, run. And so I shot across 4th Avenue, went over to the federal building, but my trip across 4th Avenue was pretty exciting. One step was like stepping into a 4-foot-deep hole, and the next step, my knee was on my chin. And so anyways, I get to the fence there right in front of the federal building, and standing right next to me, there's a big, tall guy wearing a black watch cap, and I'm sure I looked a little terrified. I mean, the vision around me was pretty impressive, but he looked at me and said, "Don't worry, kid, just an earthquake," and that consoled me for a little bit, but between me and the street was a woman wrapped around a parking meter screaming at the top of her lungs to repent, sinners. And of course, being a typical teenager, I had a lot of concern about that. And so after about 3.5 minutes, the quake kind of settled down. I mean, the vision around me was unbelievable. The road, the 4th Avenue looked like a raging Susitna River. I mean, there was big waves. I can see them going by, throwing cars around like Tonka toys. And the Westward Hotel, you know, was adding a new tower at the time. And so you could see it gracefully waving around up there, way up in the sky. Our TV antenna on top of the Lathrop building looked like a police car antenna. And I actually thought once, Mike, that gee, if I had a TV camera right now, I'd be a millionaire. But obviously I didn't. And so anyways, about 3.5 minutes in, it kind of settled down. So I shot off the fence, headed back to the TV station. It started shaking violently again. I ran back to the fence, and the big tall guy with the watch cap greeted me with, "I don't know, kid, this could be it." And, of course, I can't say anything more than I was horrified at the time. So it did last in the neighborhood of 5 minutes. It seemed to me it was about 5.5 minutes, maybe five minutes, 15 seconds. When I left the fence and headed back, I got to the Fourth Avenue Theater, and just then everybody was coming out of the theater. So that meant they had been in there the entire time. And it turns out there's a little side story about that. The manager was a high school kid because it was a matinee for the day because it was Good Friday. Kids were out of school. And he stopped everybody from running out of the building.
Wow.
Because it could have been, you know, it would have been horrible.
Yeah.
In the dark in there. And so he stopped them all and told them, please wait until it stops. You're safe in this building. He let them go after it stopped shaking, and they all filed out of there. But they all, of course, looked pretty rough, crying and eyes wide open. Anyways.
Wow, hard to tell how many lives he saved by doing that, isn't it?
No, that was an incredible thing that happened. And it certainly was one of those tiny little things that, in a sense, was unnoticed. But I heard about it much later. I actually met the guy that did that much later. We were sharing stories about the earthquake, and he was the guy inside the theater that stopped everybody. When I got back into the TV station, my boss asked me to take a quick trip down Fourth Avenue to D Street, cut across, check out Penny's, and then come back and tell him what we saw. When I got to the piece on Fourth Avenue that had dropped down, there were people walking around down there like they were having a party. One guy even said to me they were partying down under. But when we got to Penny's, what we saw there made quite a bit more somber feelings in that you could see certainly there was injury and maybe even deceased people in there. It was a pretty awe-inspiring sight to see that building crumbled up the way it was.
Just amazing. And what will you be doing when the anniversary happens, Michael?
Well, I'm going to come to the function at the museum. When things like this happen to you, I didn't realize it at the time, but it gets etched in your brain completely. There are details about what happened that I'll never forget. Now, certainly I recited the stories to high school classrooms in that I was a high school teacher for 27 years many times, but when an event like that takes place in your life, all of these little memories get etched in your brain completely, you just never forget them. So I want to meet up with others and share our stories. So I'll be there, and we're changed. All of us that were there, when an earthquake happens, I leave. I'm going to take my chances with the cracks in the ground and head outside. The sight of crumbling buildings is not where I want to be in the next earthquake.
Michael Janicek, thank you so much for sharing your memories with us today.
You bet. Thanks for doing this. It's important to all of us that were here during that time to recognize the impact of all of what took place on that day.
We're going to take a real quick break here, and when we come back, we have more earthquake stories right after this message.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. Uncle Steve here along with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. With Good Friday just a week ahead, we wanted to continue our 1964 Alaska earthquake series of interviews that we like to bring out every year. This is a longtime friend, Tim Sullivan Sr.
Tim Sullivan is the big brother of the Sullivan clan. And I discovered why Dan was able to throw me into a basketball hamper when we were in the ninth grade. It's because he was schooled by his bigger, stronger brothers. Let's give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Tim Sullivan.
That's right, Steve. That's absolutely right.
You taught your brother well.
I did.
Yes.
All my brothers.
Hey, listen, thanks for being so patient and standing by. It's really interesting to hear these stories. And where were you when it happened?
Well, I was at home, and, you know, being good Irish Catholics, we were fasting and abstaining that day. You know, it started about 5:30 and lasted for about 5 minutes, and it was the most terrifying thing I've ever been through in my life. It really was mounted to about 3 earthquakes, and they jolted each time with increasing ferocity, and the noise was just indescribable. It was as loud as anything I've ever heard in my life, and the house was creaking, and the dishes were rattling, and Mom's in the doorway yelling, "Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, assist me," and we're just hanging on for dear life.
Did you think it was a nuclear attack? I know a lot of people I've talked to thought it was.
That was the furthest thing from my mind. My mind was just hanging onto that door frame to keep from getting thrown around.
Were the other kids, because, you know, you got a pretty good-sized family, although it was probably a little smaller then, but still.
Yeah, there were only 7 of us then. and, you know, they were hanging on for dear life as well. In fact, later on, we figured out one of my brothers, Kevin, whose birthday was that day, still is that day, was up in the alley with Benny Stevens, Ted Stevens' son, and they were hanging on to a telephone pole for dear life. And so then when the earthquake was over, that's the first thing we did was start counting heads, and we noticed that Kevin wasn't there, so we started looking for him, and he came bursting in the back door from the alley, and he was scared to death, of course. And,
sure.
You know, and we were just glad it stopped. And so then it was, trying to assess things, and of course, Dad wasn't home at the time. He was in Juneau in the legislature. And so, you know, I kind of had to take on the task of being halfway in charge along with Mom. And so it was a tough time. Mom had a cake in the oven for Kevin, and that didn't get cooked all the way through. So she started cooking dinner in the fireplace and the cake in there as well. And the cake came out about half burned. But we still had the opportunity to have a birthday for Kevin that day. Even to this day, Kevin doesn't like to be here on his birthday. Right now he's in the D.C. area, but in other years he's always made it a point to leave the state before his birthday to not be here on that anniversary.
You know, what's that saying, that you can't get a cat to get back on a hot stove, but you can't get it back on a cold one either?
No, that's right. So then in the subsequent days, you know, we didn't have any water, no sewer, no electricity, no heat. So we used the fireplace for heat, and the National Guard brought in water tanks for potable water. It was interesting times, and I really don't recall how long it took to get electricity back on. I think it was weeks, and the same with gas, and the same with water. Those things all took time for the crews to get together and start putting that stuff back together. It was interesting times, and of course, I was a sophomore at West at the time, and you know, the top floor of West High was completely obliterated, and luckily, we weren't in school because it was Good Friday, and you know, following weeks, then we double-shifted over at East High School for a couple of months. I really don't remember how long it took to go back to school. I think it was at least 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks. We were enjoying the heck out of it because, you know, it was the longest spring break I ever had in my life while I was in school.
When you said you were getting food and water and all that stuff, who provided that? How'd that work?
You know, I really don't know.
Military.
Yeah, I mean, National Guard and the military were big parts of that.
Yeah.
And then actually, when it came to communication, the ham radio operators were a big factor in communication, and letting people outside know and other family members know what was going on here. And that's kind of how my dad found out how we were doing. And then he didn't show up for a couple days afterwards just because there weren't any flights going in and out, and people didn't know, you know, who was alive and who was dead. And I mean, there's a story for another time I'll tell about my dad when he was in the governor's office. But, you know, it was interesting, real interesting times. And a week later, almost to the time, and definitely a week to the, there was another earthquake, and it was a big jolt. And man, we thought, man, we're going through it again. I mean, remember that as clear as a bell. That was a big, big shot.
I know they had all these aftershocks going on. I mean, it sounded like it says for months. Do you remember that period? Because You went through many of them.
I mean, you had earthquakes all the time after that. It was, you know, and they all ranged in probably in the 4, 5, and 6 category, you know, ranges as far as intensity goes. I want to say one other thing about the ham radio operators. You know, to this day, they still get free driver's license plates or license plates for their cars because of the work that they did in during the earthquake.
That's how we got our information, by the way. My mother's brother, he was up here. He was a geologist, and that's how we found out information, because all the information we received was Alaska's destroyed. And it's really interesting because when you look at the deaths that actually came as a result of this, they're amazingly small for the kind of event this was. You know,
we know, I mean, there was an old family friend, he lived in Valdez, and when the news about the tsunami came, he went down to the Valdez dock with his two kids to go watch the tsunami come in. And, of course, you never found him, never saw him, never heard from him again after the tsunami hit in Valdez.
The information I read was, I mean, there was something like the wave that came in was 70 meters in Valdez, and not only was the tsunamis, but they also had where they had the undercurrents created, like Portage dropped, 3 meters, and what was the damage to your house? Do you remember?
Actually, pretty minimal. We were pretty fortunate. You know, the house shook like crazy, but, you know, later on we found some small cracks in the concrete block of the walls of the basement, and that was about it.
This goes to prove if a home can house as many Irish as your house, you know, it can put up with anything.
You're absolutely right about that, Steve.
When you think back on the earthquake, Tim, when you start reflecting back on it, what is the thing that just jumps out in your mind on this? I mean, what comes to your mind most when you think about it?
Well, total and abject fear.
I mean, I can't imagine 9.2.
And even then, it wasn't classified as 9.2. It was classified as 7.6 initially. And then, of course, they've changed the Richter scale since. But even at that point, it was still, you know, one of the largest earthquakes ever. You know, it still scares me to this day. I'm still shaking right now as we speak, Steve.
Hey, listen. You should really be shaking, because anybody appears on the Big Alaska Show, they can tell you that their careers tank.
Stripling, thank you so much for the opportunity.
So that was Tim Sullivan Sr., and, you know, I grew up with these guys. And so to hear these stories from all these different people, what's really interesting to me, Mike, is how different all the stories are and yet how similar they are.
Yes.
But this one is really fun. Dana Stabenow is a very accomplished author, especially these days. When we did this interview with her a number of years ago, she was down in Seldovia and Homer. She may have been Seward for all I know. That's how long it's been. I can't remember. But anyway, her story is a very unique one because the earthquake was on her birthday. This is Dana Stabenow.
Please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Dana Stabenow.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Hey, so you're in Homer.
Yes, I am. I'm sitting here looking through the trees at Readout. It is a gorgeous morning.
Let's see. We're going to look out over here. And Carl, why don't we do our quick weather report?
It's cold.
That's right. So, Homer, did you grow up in Homer?
I grew up in Seldovia. I was born in Anchorage. I grew up in Cordova and then Seldovia.
Was Seldovia, I mean, did they have like the population of one?
No. It was actually much larger. They've only got a population of about 300 now, but back when I was a kid, there were 5 canneries. Before the earthquake and urban renewal, there were 5 canneries. The population would get up to like 800 people in the summertime when the salmon were running.
So what happened after the earthquake? Did it just wipe stuff out?
Oh, well, it's a big, long story that I, you know, won't go into, but there were a lot of shenanigans and this and that and the other thing. And after the earthquake didn't do that much damage, but urban renewal definitely did. They pretty much tore down all of Seldovia's waterfront, and 4 of the 5 counties left and didn't come back. And when the king, and one that was left was Lowell Wakefield's King Crab cannery, and then the stocks crashed in the 80s. When the King Crab stocks crashed in the 80s, then that cannery went belly up too. And it is now the quaint little, you know, village that you see today.
Now, you were in the earthquake.
Yeah.
You were a little kid when this happened. You were in Seldovia at the time?
In Seldovia, yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about what you remember about the earthquake.
Well, it happened in the middle of my 12th birthday party.
That makes her 22.
So basically, that Good Friday was your birthday?
Yes, it was. and a rocking time was had by all.
Man, I'll tell you, did you have friends over for your birthday?
Yes, I did. I was opening presents. I didn't even notice the earthquakes going on until my friend Kathy elbowed me in the side and said, "Hey, look at that picture on the wall." And the picture was going back and forth, and then we realized the house was going back and forth.
Dana. There's no need to shake the whole state. That's not necessary.
Well, I think I got something better than a pony.
I was saying, man, that is a surprise party. Your parents were great at this. What'd you end up doing? Did you guys go outside?
When we first noticed the earthquake, it was that primary motion, you know, the motion that goes back and forth, and that went on for quite a while, and then it seemed to die away, and my mother, you know, we're 12-year-old girls, I mean, you know, got up and started screaming, and my mother said, "Everybody, sit down, don't move," so we didn't. We sat down, and we didn't move, and then when that primary motion died away, the secondary motion, you know, like the jackhammer, came back really hard, and that time my mom said, "Everybody, out of the house, now." So, I mean, we could hardly walk. We would have lost our balance if we weren't leaning on our wall on our way to the door, leaning against the wall on the way to the door. The cupboard doors were banging open. Everything was falling out. The refrigerator door banged open. Everything fell out. We got outside, and the trees were whipping back and forth like somebody was shaking them, like they were holding a whip.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Tracy and Kathy Knight were late because they were at choir practice because, you know, it was Good Friday.
Yeah.
And we heard them screaming, and they said later that the ground opened up and closed in front of them.
Wow.
Yeah, it was an interesting party. Most interesting party I ever had.
I can hear the choir practice going, and if I were the king of the world.
So, that's our show. The 1964 9.2 Good Friday Alaska earthquake and the RV buying process. Quite the contrast, but they're both learning experiences. And one thing Liz Amazing mentioned that we found out to be true, there are good people out there in the RV industry that want to deliver good customer service. And we found a couple of them, Jesse and Enrique, in the service department where we bought our RV. They're the reason we kept coming back. And as far as a 9.2 earthquake, we just hope that remains a distant memory. And to my baby girl, love you. And Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank our guest Liz for joining us. We want to thank you for listening. And we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tunnel, or online at neighborswindowsanddoors.com. And Big Alaska Show, blend the intense early morning coffee to cut through the early morning fog. Visit BigAlaskaShowBlend.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guest, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good lying through your tooth-tall Alaska tales, it's got to be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.